The following episode deals with sensitive topics and may not be suitable for all audiences. Welcome back to Question the Case.
I guess we should just introduce you first. This is Tina Church. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a licensed factual investigator, and I did my first murder case in 1979.
What is a factual investigator?
Well, I deal with only facts, not innuendo, supposition. I just deal with the evidence. When I take on a case, whether it be at trial level, but particularly post-conviction, I just look at the facts because that is what will tell you the story. I became licensed with my own company in 1997. However, I had been working under a very well-known criminal defense attorney for probably maybe 6 years prior to that. So I've been an investigator for a very long time.
And how is it that you became involved with Ivan Cantu?
Well, he actually wrote me a letter, and I responded, as I respond to everyone who writes to me. And I had done a lot of cases on Texas's death row, and he wrote me a letter asking for help. And I told him that I would certainly take a look at it, which I did. And had his case for a very long time. I worked with several different attorneys on his case, as well as forensic pathologists. And seriously, Ivan Cantu's case is one of those cases. I've certainly done much higher profile than Ivan's. But when he presented his story to me, I'm always going to, listen to what the client has to say. It's vitally important that you do. And he started out with one theory of a drug deal gone bad, and it just escalated to, it became, do you want to believe story number one, story number two, story number three, or the big, or do you want the big box? He jumped from the toll road records all the way up to the jeans not fitting him. It wasn't relevant that the gun was found in his apartment. And, the more I started digging, the more things started coming out. And I worked with Dr. Glenn Larkin, who's a forensic pathologist. And Dr. Larkin was a wonderful man. And we did seriously have a problem with the time of death in Ivan's case. And actually, he told me he had written 7 chapters in the Wecht Book of Forensic Pathology. This was no stupid man. And we did have a real big problem with the time of death on Ivan's case. However, when he changed his theory and started going on this wild deal of, he was into the subprime lending mortgage business, and he was making it a conspiracy that it went all the way to the White House. And one of the attorneys that I have worked with for years and years and years, who's very well recognized on Texas's death row, I let Ivan speak to him, and we were taken back by some of the ridiculous things that he was saying, because they just...
Such as?
Well, that, this all goes all the way to the White House. I mean, it started sounding like he was just a conspiracy theorist, and he just started changing his story so many times. And I had met, at that time, Tammy Cantu was not his wife. That was his girlfriend. And I had told her, I said, Tammy, you do as you please, but, you better think twice about marrying someone on death row. And I'm not saying that they're not worthy of love, because yes, they are. Everyone is. But, Ivan's case had been handled at trial by Matt Gellar. And I think he had Lydia Brandt. She may have done his 11071, his state writ. But as the case progressed, it became more and more obvious that there was something seriously wrong. And it was several years after the crime, Tammy contacted me that she had some newly discovered evidence, because I don't think a lot of people don't understand the process of the death penalty. You know, in 1996, President Clinton signed into law the Anti-Terrorism Death Penalty Effective Act, which not only refers to death penalty cases, but all criminal cases. So there's a lot of the procedural default. You know, you have your trial, and then you have your direct appeal. You have your 11071, or your state writ of habeas corpus, and that's the main event. And that's where everything has to go in there and be raised and preserved at that level, or you're not allowed to raise it in federal court. And so there's a lot of procedural barring rules that become paramount in slowing down, or that became a hindrance for men to receive relief in the courts. And Ivan has been through all of the courts, and you know, the issue of DNA came up. Well, out of the blue one day, Tammy, I believe it was in 1998, she had contacted me, I believe, I forget exactly the date, about the shirt that his mother, Sylvia, had found in her other son's closet. And Tammy wanted to send it to me for DNA testing. Well, one thing that I did wrong, and I will acquiesce to this, and the reason I did it is because anytime I would talk to a professional person, a colleague, as soon as I hung up from talking to them, Tammy would call them and bother them, and they did not like it at all. And so I had told her I was sending it to one lab, when in fact I sent it to another, because I did not want her harassing these people. And so what ultimately happens is it came back, and let me tell you about the shirt. The shirt came to me in just a flat rate priority mailbox, and it was delivered here, no signature required, nothing. I let her know that I got it. I opened the shirt. It was in a plastic baggie, which is not the best thing to put evidence in by any means. And I recall the shirt so vividly. And it was a kind of a, like a milky brown, it's very hard to describe. It was a milky brown, but it had kind of a rose color tint to it. And the fabric, if you were to touch it and feel it, would feel like it wasn't silk, it was not, it had a sateen feel, like a high grade. You know, it was an expensive shirt. And I remember looking at the shirt and going, because if you held the shirt up and looking at it straight ahead, on the left side of the shirt, there was what appeared to be just a stain. But it did not have the touch or feel or anything like that of blood, which you would normally see. And so, you know, I looked at it, and I thought, well, no, this is odd. And it was very odd to me. But I went ahead and I sent it down to the lab, and it came back that it was very degraded. It was degraded and could not be tested. And so I went ahead and told Tammy that, and she wanted them to, you know, test again. And I did test. I sent it back, and there was no way, they could not identify any kind of human blood. No blood at all. And so I got that shirt back, and I just put it in the box and sent it back to her. And then all of a sudden, when I'm done with the case, because there was no way to prove Ivan innocent, after speaking to his girlfriend, Amy, at the time, speaking to Matt Geller, when you confess your guilt to your own attorney, the attorney has the responsibility to provide a defense to that client. That's what defense people do. But you cannot, you know, be introducing fake evidence. But he had a real moment, Ivan did, in a meeting that was also witnessed by another party. And they had said, you know, I don't care if I effing did this. You guys are my attorney. It's your job to get me out of this. So at that moment then, and I did try, and I did talk to trial counsel, and they did tell me that this is exactly what happened. And I was shocked and very disappointed, but he couldn't you know, explain that at all, and nor would he even try. And so what he did is he ended up, he was done with me. And Tammy, and which, you know, I was glad to be done with them, because Tammy was so disrespectful that my brother, he had been diagnosed with esophageal cancer in February of 2008. And he was scheduled for surgery in June of that year to remove the tumor. And I was at the hospital, and I asked her, please, do not call me during this time. My brother was very special to me and will always be special to me. And I was sitting in the surgical room with my sister-in-law, and the phone rings, and who is it? Tammy. And I thought, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I was so disgusted, I had no words. I had absolutely no words that she could be so disrespectful after I had said, do not call me on this day, and she did. So I was done. I was absolutely done. And then Ivan took it upon himself to do a smear campaign against me at Polunsky. And, you know, the people that knew better, knew better. And they were writing me letters, you know, telling me what he was saying and blah, blah, blah. Well, time goes on, and Tammy starts telling me that she had never received this shirt. And I knew that not to be true. So she was hanging on to that story. And so it was quite a while later, I got a phone call from an investigator in out of Fort Worth. And he said, do you know Tammy Cantu? And I said, yes. And he says, do you know anything about this shirt? And I said, oh, my God, the shirt. The shirt. Yes, I do. And I explained the story to him. And he said, well, she had brought, now, bear in mind, she supposedly had never received the shirt, and yet she walks into his office with this shirt. So, okay, so that there's kind of your telltale sign. That's a little bad. And but he gave me a heads up. So from there, they just start slamming my name. But the point of this is that the people that know me know that that was hogwash. And so, you know, time rolls on, and then, you know, I didn't hear from him for a long time, just, you know, craziness out of Ivan. He quit writing to me, and this, I forget this clown's name. Oh, this investigator he's got now.
Matt.
Matt, that's his name. He calls me out of the blue, and, you know, listening to him talk, I'm like, are you kidding me? He's an investigator? And he's doing what if, what if, what if, and I'm going, you know, this, and being honest, I don't believe this man could find his own rear end with a flashlight, two hands, and a doggone GPS. I mean, really, seriously. So I talked to him a couple of times. He presents me with a picture of a white shirt that clearly depicts, I mean, this is a white, looks like a Oxford shirt, dress, or it's an, it looks like an Oxford shirt or a dress shirt, button-down collar, and it looks like it's got, like somebody stood in front of it, threw blood all over it. And I'm like, what the hell is this shirt? Well, this is the one that Tammy gave to him. Really? Well, unfortunately, Matt, that's not the shirt that was sent to me. I mean, here we've got these all of these shirts popping up.
Well, I have a photo of this shirt, and I will be sharing that in the Facebook group and on the website so people can see that it is not the shirt that you're describing.
No, the shirt that was sent to me was a milky brown, and the only way to describe the stain, if any of the women out there have a expensive, you know, Santene high thread high count sheets, you would see, if you put lotion on your feet and you would rub them on the feet in the sheet, then there might be a like an oily stain on the sheet. And this is what this looked like. This looked more like some sort of a greasy stain. But Tammy insisted I did what I was supposed to do. I did due diligence all the way through. And it was, you know, by all means, if someone out there can prove Ivan Cantu innocent, God bless them. I don't want to see Ivan Cantu die. I don't want to see any. No, I've been through too many. No.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know that you've done a lot of amazing work for people on Texas death row. You've helped commute sentences, you've helped in exonerations, and you've helped change laws in Texas.
Well, yes, back in 2000 when I did one of the cases, that's how post-conviction I got the first reprieve out of Governor Bush. This was a DNA case. I worked with Barry Scheck on that case.
You know, people, I think they get confused here. They, for some reason, think that the purpose of this is to get Ivan an execution date and to put him to death, but this isn't about that at all. I just like you, I don't want to see anybody put to death. It's not, I don't think that it's our place, you know, and as I've already said, I would love, if there was anything I could do, if there was any way for Ivan to get life in prison, then I would do what I can to make that happen, but he refuses to own up to what happened, unfortunately, and there's not much that can be done.
Factually, all of the evidence, you know, points to him.
Right.
And it's just, you can't manufacture evidence. And when I look at a case, it is with a fresh set of eyes, thinking somebody has overlooked something. And, you know, after interviewing so many people, and, you know, there's one thing that I will tell you about Sylvia. I had flown into Dallas, and a friend of mine is a true crime writer. And I don't know how Sylvia got that address, but certainly she had not been invited. And I had flown down to Dallas, and my friend picked me up, and I think this was on a Saturday morning. We were going to get up and just, you know, enjoy the day. And Sylvia shows up at her house, tugging all of these boxes with her. And I was stunned. I didn't know this woman from Adam's house cat. She announces who she is and brings all of his legal paperwork to me. There, and I'm supposed to bring this back on the plane? And, yeah, my friend had to ship the stuff to me. I mean, how rude. But, I took a lot of phone calls from Sylvia, and I understand. You know, I have a not-for-profit organization called The Other Victims Advocacy, and I understand that when a loved one goes to prison, the whole family goes. You know, I get that. You know, I deal with that every day. But at the same time, you know, I know that's her son. She loves her son. And I'm glad that she's there for him. And my heart breaks that she has to go through this. But, you know, it is what it is. We cannot change reality. Tammy has put a lot of things out there about me, you know, which is fine. You know, I could care less about Tammy. But this last round with this white shirt, that just... God is my living witness. That is not the shirt that was sent to me at all. I would have been on that like a swarm of bees. You know, back in 2000, I got the first reprieve out of Governor Bush when he was running for president, and that's how Chapter 64 came about, so they inmates can get post-conviction DNA. I was the investigator on the Cameron Todd Willingham case, proved him innocent, and Walter Reeves, who was the attorney of record at the time, you know, clemency has to be turned in like 21 days before the execution date, and he, instead of doing a successive petition on Todd Willingham, he referred it to Governor Perry for clemency. Well, Governor Perry, as we know, allowed the execution to be carried out. And despite what anyone wants to see in the movie, Elizabeth Gilbert was not the investigator on the case. It was me. I have all the material here. I have his letter asking me for help. I worked with Dr. Gerald Hurst, the fire expert, on that case. We proved him innocent, and they allowed him to die. I had even went to Barry Scheck to try to get him to come on board, and he would not come on board because it was not a DNA case. However, you know, everywhere Governor Perry was going to do a presidential speech, because he was running for president, I would just send out a release. Ask him about Cameron Todd Willingham. I just wouldn't be quiet about it because I was there that day and I was the one. His attorney called me and I had to break the news to his parents. Your son's going to die in just a little bit, a few minutes. It was awful. It was awful, absolutely awful. They were the nicest family. The only thing in that movie that is true is that Cameron Todd Willingham was executed and innocent. The player of Todd was not anything like Todd. Laura Dern plays supposedly me, and she doesn't know she's not playing me. That's all the paperwork. But anyway, getting back to Ivan.
I was wondering, you know, what was the problem with the time of death?
Well, the, going back, well, one of the things I thought was very odd is when I seen the crime scene photos, I know that in the spare bedroom, there was a pillow. This was a very nice home. I mean, the stark difference between that home and where Ivan lived was night and day. James and Amy had a very nice home, very well decorated, very clean, and everything matched. And the spare bedroom, the pillow that matched the bedding was in her bedroom, which would have been unusual for as neat as what the setting was.
Right.
And you could tell by James, the way that he was shot and the blood spatter, you know, that was just dead on.
Right.
And with Amy, it just didn't fit right because we were looking at both James' autopsy and Amy's autopsy. Neither one of those, you know, they weren't jiving time-wise as far as rigor mortis, lividity, you know, all of the other things involved here that you have to take in forensically. It just wasn't fitting. So, you know, we started wondering, was there another person there? But I know that at some point he took Amy, his fiance, girlfriend, back to the crime scene and said, you know, if what she said to me is, if you ever tell anybody, this is what's going to happen to you.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard so much about that engagement ring, I could scream. What's the engagement ring have to do anything with this murder? Please tell me.
Yeah, I've had many conversations with Sylvia, and, you know, she seems to believe that because Amy lied about the Rolex and she lied about the ring, then everything else must be a lie, and that Ivan deserves a new trial, and that is because, you know, that's what makes it a capital murder case. However, they don't realize that it doesn't have to be that something is stolen. In this case, it's that two people were murdered.
Yes, it was a multiple victim. You know, you have to look at what the aggravating factors are. You know, during his trial, they brought in, you know, XYZ girlfriends, ex-wives, whatever, testifying against him of his being very violent.
He's abusive, and he raped one of them.
Well, right, and then you have, you know, in a death penalty, you have to answer, yes, the special issue number two. And is this person going to be a future danger to society? And, you know, that is a real, I have a problem with that, because how can anyone predict someone's future?
Right.
But given the, you know, tests and so forth that were administered, and his behavior, and the jury heard the evidence and they decided. And so once you have a verdict in like that, you know, you have a direct appeal automatically. I don't even remember who did his direct appeal. But then when he went to the 11071, you know, and then on into federal court, into the circuit court, Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, was scheduled for a date. Gina Bond stepped in, and she called me. We talked, and, of course, she kind of had the same feelings about Tammy calling her all the time. It's what I did with Tammy calling me. But when it got up to, he did get a stay of execution, and I was very thankful for that.
Right.
And if they can come up with something, I'm not the best investigator in the world. You know, I gave it my best shot, and I certainly did not get wealthy off that case. If I would have charged Tammy for every minute I spent on the phone, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, Liz, right now. I would be in, you know, on a retired vacationing somewhere.
She seems to say that she paid you about $10,000 to $12,000.
She's a damn liar.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that on, she's a damn liar.
What did happen to the ring? You know, we've heard that it just, you know, Ivan took it back and then it disappeared. But did you hear anything about it?
Amy, his fiance, told me that when they went to Arkansas, she was so freaked out that she opened the window and threw it out the window. That's what she said to me.
On the way to Arkansas or on the way back?
You know, I don't remember if it was to or from. And she,
yeah, I think it was from, because she did show it to her family.
Well, you know, I knew it was thrown out the window from the car. I don't remember if it was to, you know, this has been
right.
Many years ago.
Yeah. Why did you believe that there may be another person there?
Well, I mean, you always want to look at every possibility.
But was there anything in particular?
You know, I don't really recall, you know, what my thoughts were at that time. It was just something that Dr. Larkin and I had, you know, tossed around. Is there a way that someone else could have been there?
Mm-hmm.
And is Ivan, you know, taking the fall for someone else?
Right.
I don't know. We thought, you know, was his brother there? You know, everyone still wants to, I think his brother's name is Eric.
That's so funny you say that, because that is actually one of my theories.
Well, maybe he was. You know, that I don't know. And see, that's the problem. None of us know because we weren't there.
Right.
But to understand post-conviction, in order to be found factually innocent, you have to have newly discovered evidence not available at the time of trial through due diligence. This is outside record-based claims, and that's all we were working with. So much of this stuff was, you know, brought up during trial. You can't keep regurgitating what happened in trial. You can,
yeah,
you know, go for ineffective assistance of counsel, your Strickland versus Washington, Brady violations, this, that, whatever. But the truth of the matter is, you know, the facts never changed.
Right.
And so people that don't understand the process and the death penalty, it's very, very difficult. Now, you know, Gina's a very good attorney, and she's done a successive petition for him, and he may be sitting on that now. I don't know. I quit. You know, I was so sick of hearing about that case. You know, I pray for every inmate, you know, the victims' families, the inmates, their families, the inmates themselves, every night. I don't want anyone to die. And it sickens me that the death penalty even exists. But there are other people sitting on death row right now that are in dire need of help, and people that are wrongfully convicted, as I believe Liz's mother is. You know, I can just tell you factually, as a seasoned investigator, what I learned in Ivan's case, and if somebody can prove him innocent, good luck. Can Matt, whatever the hell his name is, do it? No. And you know, it's so funny. The last conversation I had with him, he told me, he says, well, I can't figure this out. I called Sylvia, and Sylvia described the same shirt that you did, but yet Tammy says it's this white one. And I said, duh. I said, I have not talked to Sylvia, number one. Number two, how could she and I have came up with the same doggone shirt, and all of a sudden this white shirt that looks like there's blood spatter all over it, where'd she get right. that one?
The whole thing
and
is
he said, I just can't figure that out. And I'm going, well, you know, I literally pulled my phone away from my ear and looked at it, and I thought, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I believe they told you that they were trying to find reasonable doubt or...
Reasonable doubt, that's already been...
exactly.
That, you know, like I said, you can't keep regurgitating what happened at trial. The jury's already spoken. It's newly discovered evidence not available at the time of trial through due diligence. So you're going to have Joe Schmo show up and say, yes, it was me, I did it, and have corroborating evidence. You know, recantations, all anything like that, someone snitch on him. You know, that's even very hard to do. We know that from Cameron Todd Willingham. Johnny Webb, you know, snitched on him. That's how he ended up on death row. And, you know, he recanted to save him. No.
Yeah. You were the one that told me that Ivan confessed to his mitigation.
Yeah.
So to both of them at the same time?
Yes. It was during a meeting.
Do you have any knowledge of what was said?
Well, that's exactly what I said before. I don't give a F who that I did this. You guys are to get me off of it. He had one of his Texas come-aparts right there in the middle of a meeting and acquiesced to his guilt.
Wow. Did he give a reason for the murder?
No. He never wanted to discuss that with me. And I found Matthew Geller to be a very, very honorable man, because the case of Charles Dean Hood, Matt Geller had represented him. And Matt Geller was a stand-up guy and signed an affidavit, you know, stating newly discovered evidence that was not found at the time of trial. And that was where the judge and the DA, during a client's trial, they were having an affair.
Wow.
And, you know, that's pretty powerful. That's newly discovered evidence. But, you know, it's just a very, very sad case. Two people died. They shouldn't have died. And unfortunately, they did. And if someone else can prove his innocence, God bless them. I don't think this Matt can.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how he's having all of these privileged phone calls with Ivan Cantu. He told me he talks to him all the time, and I'm thinking, look, you know, I know the rules down there. He has to be
What are the rules?
Well, you have to be working under the direction of an attorney.
And I did speak to Gina, and she did say he was not working under her.
No, I mean, it's crazy. And during this COVID shutdown especially, attorneys are having a difficult time setting up appointments to speak to their clients. You know, how is he doing it?
You know, going through this case, I'm so glad that you and I finally, you know, were able to speak. But if I had to come up with an idea, to me, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. I don't have all the evidence, obviously. I had to go back and do a lot of the Freedom of Information requests, because the argument that we've been given is that the DA in Collin County are refusing to honor the requests, and they have this petition that they want people to sign saying, how can you execute a man when he doesn't even know what he's being executed for, because they won't give him the files. However,
What file are we talking about? You know, his discovery? He's got his discovery.
It's the discovery.
She's put his case multiple times on the web.
Oh, absolutely. And I know it's a lie because I have the case file. Sylvia gave it to me.
I don't know what they're talking about there. I've seen the case files. My God.
I mean, it's just, they're just trying to cause confusion. And, you know, I have the case file. We've redacted personal information. And that, too, will also be on the Facebook group and on the website so people can have a look for themselves. You know, this is publicly available information that was requested through a FOIA request. And, you know, they've been saying that he didn't get a fair trial. Well, the thing is, who were the defense going to call? Anybody they called, the prosecution was going to get to cross-examine. And the only people that he could have called were people who would have perjured themselves. And we know that an attorney cannot call a witness if they know they're going to perjure themselves. And, you know, the people that they didn't call were his mother and his girlfriend, Tawny. And that's because they had already proven that they had perjured themselves, not only on the stand, but in their statements.
Well, you know, a lot of Ivan, to me, was his worst enemy because he couldn't stick to one story. Usually, you know, people that have a problematic case, they'll, you know, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. But then this guy really screwed up. And I've dealt with clients before that I would have swore were innocent. And one guy in particular, he swore. And I'm telling you, the guy that he was with, I would have bet my bottom dollar that this guy was the one responsible for the murder. And a week before he was to be executed, his brother went in there to visit him. He confessed his guilt. And when the brother came out of the unit and called and told me, I was just stunned. And the night that he died, you know, he called me and he was just apologizing all over the place and, you know, telling me how sorry he was that he had lied to me. And I said, you know, I'm not even concerned about that. I said, all I'm concerned about, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you spiritually ready? And he said, yes, I am. And he says, now, there isn't nobody knows what song is going to be played. But I'm going to tell you. And I said, okay. And he says, it's better than I used to be. Not the one by Tim McGraw, but by Sammy Kershaw. And we said our goodbyes, and that's always a very, very hard thing to do. And when we said our goodbyes, I hung up the phone. I went and I listened to the song, and I cried like a baby. Their guilt or innocence does not matter to me. That's between them and God. It's my job to investigate as thoroughly and do everything that I possibly can. And, you know, Tammy's saying that she paid me $10,000 or $12,000. No. No, 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 no. No.
Yeah.
No. I've done much higher profile cases than that for free, pro bono.
I mean, when I got started in all of this, all I wanted to do was help somebody, you know, and it's exactly like your foundation, the Other Victims Advocate. That's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the advocate for this family who have been railroaded by the system that claims to be going after justice. And it's just, I got sucked in, and I fell for it. Now I realize my mistakes and where I went wrong and how I need to approach things in the future. But like you said, I don't want to see Ivan die. I don't want to see anybody die. I know what it's like to lose a loved one, and I don't want anybody to ever have to feel that. And
no, and
especially
I've
not in that.
So
yeah.
Many of them. So many of them. I've held mothers in my arms at the hospitality house while their loved one's being executed. I've seen them be taken away from the unit I've seen the death row groupies pile in there and take those last minutes away from the families. I've seen it all. And believe me, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. No one to have to go through that. You know, to suffer a loss, it's murder. I've got death certificates here. You know, cause of death, lethal injection, manner, homicide. And, you know, it's really sad to see, you know, to have these documents. And, you know, Ivan, he was a very charming person. I met him more than once. I liked him. I had no problem with him. And I really did everything that I could, and I kept Tammy constantly updated. Ivan paper whooped me to death. I responded to all of his letters. I did everything within my power. I hate to be rude, but you can't take chicken shit and make chicken salad out of it. Sorry. And, you know, they just don't understand the process. You know, they keep on regurgitating what happened at trial. That's already been litigated.
Right.
That's already been, you know, established, litigated. Forget it. It's a high standard. On a successive petition, it's a very high standard to meet. You know, I've got one client now. I think he's on his sixth successive petition. You know, laws keep changing. Different things keep happening. And that's a good thing. You know, that saves a lot of lives. But at the same time, you just cannot, you know, pick things out of thin air and, you know, prove it. You know, you have to prove it. You know, look at Gary Graham, one eyewitness. You know, he died years and years ago. Look at Reuben Cantu. You know, we can talk about all these people that we know that could very well have been innocent and were innocent, most likely.
Yeah.
It's so tragic.
You know, the justice system is just so broken. You know, they told us that they wanted justice for my dad, and we kept saying, this isn't justice. This isn't what we want. This isn't the truth. You've got this all wrong. Everybody that knew my family, that knew my parents, my dad's brother was, you know, on my mom's side. They were all saying, you've got this wrong. So I don't know who they were reaching for justice for, because it certainly wasn't us.
Well, I can say this. You know, I've looked at your mother's stuff, and I think I've told you before. There's a lot of things that I don't know, but there's one thing that I do know. There's no way your mother could have done that. No. No. No way.
And
no
I hope way. That we get to cover that definitely next season.
Well, I think, and that's why I tried to encourage you, not because I thought that this case wasn't worth covering. It's been covered, and I've read a lot of it. And, you know, some of it I've just, you know, and Kelly, James's sister, what a wonderful person. And that family's been through hell.
Yeah.
You know, she knows what went on. And why keep dragging through? And that's why I said, you know, Liz, you're spinning your wheels. You know, some of the best people in the country have looked at this case. And you just can't, you know, he's got a good attorney. Let it play out. Unless someone can come up with the standard of review that the state requires, he's going to get executed. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's a shame. It's awful. It's to try and make sense of such a senseless act. You know, two people were murdered out of pure jealousy. As I know people think that that's just a crazy thing, that no one would kill anyone out of pure jealousy. But I've spoken with the family members on the Mosqueda side, and they let me know that James had lent Ivan, I think, $15,000, $20,000, and he was about to lend him more money because he basically said he was giving it to him because he knew that he wouldn't be able to pay him back, and it was in such a short time frame. You know, nobody knows what that money was for or why Ivan needed that money, but James was willing to do it. And if you go through the case files, which I know you've done many times, you know, Ivan was trying to get another $15,000 out of James, I think the day before he was murdered. And I think it was Frank Perez or one of the people that were working in the office with James that were running interference because James was, you know, not interested in talking about it. And maybe that's what set Ivan off. You know, I know that...
he's very hot-tempered.
Right, and I know that you're the one that told me that, or I spoke with one of these people, but he claimed that he gave James a large amount of, I don't know if it was cocaine or marijuana, and James sold it off, and Ivan felt that he was owed some of that money, and he was upset that he had not received any, and that is why he went over that night, not knowing that...
Excuse me for interrupting you, but that the drug deal, there was supposed to have been cocaine in the attic of James and Amy's house. And that was supposed to be Ivan's money that had bought that cocaine. He switched stories.
And Sylvia says in one of her interviews in one of these podcasts that James had built a safe into the foundation of the house. It was under their bed, under the carpet. So you're telling me like he had to move the bed every time he wanted to get into this safe that was under the carpet, and that's where he kept his money and drugs and Rolex. But she's telling her ex-husband about this, and he's saying he doesn't know anything about it. And one of her statements, she's saying that one of James's friends told Sylvia about it. However, when I spoke with that friend, they said that it's not true, and that even if it were, James would never, ever tell anybody that he had a safe in his house.
Well, the point is, you know, let's get back to the basics.
Right.
James and Amy were in that house. Someone or people went in there and murdered them. All the evidence turns to Ivan, even out of his own mouth. So what do you do with that? You know, you can, you're going to beat a dead horse. And that's what I told you, Liz. You know, your mother is in custody on a charge that really needs to be examined. There are many other cases out there that, you know, actually need a good set of eyes on. Ivan has had so many people, and I don't doubt that Tammy has spent a lot of money on investigators because I've gotten a call from a lot of them that she's went to wanting to know, you know, what's up with this woman. And I appreciate her dedication and her love for him. A lot of the inmates that I lost one a couple of years ago that I had for 19 years. It about damn near broke my heart. In 1998, or 99, I lost one, and there was no money for burial. And a couple of women out of Dallas County wanted to take him up there and show him off. It was a very high-profile case. And I stepped up, and I said, no, no. And I sent him back to San Antonio. I paid for the funeral.
Wow.
No, I'm not in it for the money. Trust me.
No, your reputation has shown that. You know, when I heard you talk about this case and when we went over the facts and we talked about everything, it just became very apparent that there's no more that that anyone can do. You know, he's made his bed and now he has to lie in it. And I wish that he would take this time to spend with his family, you know, to make things right. I know that Kelly requested a meeting with him. And
Murder Victims for Reconciliation.
Right. And he sent her a recording, which is also available. All of this is available on the website and the Facebook group. But he sent her a recording. Please keep an open mind. Please talk to him. If there's any questions, he wants to answer them because he's innocent. He didn't do this. And she goes and makes this request, and he denies it. And she says, well, how about a letter? Can I write a letter? And he denies it. So I'm not sure what game they're playing here. You know, they say this is a DNA case, that they can't get the DNA into CODIS. I've offered to pay for the DNA. I offered to get it into CODIS through my contacts. And I did this publicly in one of these groups for Ivan and his podcast. And I got the runaround. You know, she really didn't want to do that. And in the end, she said that it wasn't a DNA case. So,
well, it's a shooting. It's a gunshot case. You know, the gunshot, you know, the weapon, you know, all of this has been examined. You know, the very gun that was found in his apartment is a gun that was used in a murder. And
it was found in his girlfriend's apartment, in Tony's apartment.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. But the jeans. Now, if I was going to kill somebody, you know, would I wear my own pair of jeans? No. You know, I mean, he's not stupid.
In the arrest record in the binders, you know, it says that they showed him the pair of jeans they found, and he was like, those are mine. And then the detective said, well, we found an exact pair, the exact size, exact make, in your closet. And that's when he asked for a lawyer.
Well, butter my butt and call me biscuit. What does that mean? I mean, this is not rocket science here.
Yeah.
You know, when you start applying a little bit of common sense and matching it up with the evidence, you know, you come up with one conclusion. And it's a sad conclusion. You know, it's sad that two people lost their lives over what reason? Nobody really knows for sure.
Jealousy, money. That's all I can think of because, I mean, that's not like you got a lot out of it. It's just disgusting. I don't understand why Sylvia recorded all her phone calls. She allowed me to record phone calls with her because I was doing this blog at first. It became before Kelly encouraged me to do the podcast. I started writing this blog and she kind of screws up in it and she tells me that they didn't get home till about noon, and that's when they left, and they realized they had to return the Corvette, and I didn't know that she had all this knowledge of it already, so I corrected her, and I should have let her just keep talking, but,
well,
you know.
Sylvia, you know, she wants to save her son, and I don't blame any mother for that. You know, I'll never, you know, blame a mother for that. You know, I think Sylvia would feel better if she knew, you know, a good man would stand up and say, yes, I did this. I don't know why in the hell I did it. My God, I took two lives. And, you know, apologize to the world and just take it like a man. But Ivan wants an audience. He is a control freak, and he couldn't control me because I was not about to listen to all of these ridiculous conspiracy theory stories that he was giving, that all of this went to this subprime lending. It went from cocaine to subprime lending to this. I mean, you name it, he came up with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it became obvious that Ivan, you know, was into fraud, and he was, you know, if everybody I spoke to said that he was committing fraud, he was, you know, doing these large loans that eventually, you know, that people couldn't keep up with. And he started getting into drugs, and he just spiraled out of control, and he lost everything.
He did. He did. And it was, you know, it was a shame. And I feel badly for Ivan, but, you know, I'll tell you what. It's just, I think Sylvia would maybe rest a little bit better if her son were executed and she knew that he was guilty and had gotten his life right. But, you know, no one will ever know.
I get the feeling Sylvia knows a lot more about this than she lets on. She plays the part of a concerned mother very well. I mean, I'm sure she is concerned, but in looking into her...
Why would you throw Eric under the bus? That's her son, too.
I believe it's because she told me the story, and again, this is in the recordings that are being provided, that he was trying to climb onto her car. She got away because she had some drugs in there that he wanted, and he fell off the car and had to have three holes in his drilled into his head to relieve the pressure, and now he's on disability. He lives with her, but she's basically like he's not there anymore. But that's not the picture that I see on Facebook. I get a completely different perspective. But I get the feeling that she thinks that even if they were to pin this on him, like nothing could happen to him because he's mentally not there anymore.
Oh, really? Look at guy gouged his eye out and ate it in front of the guard, and he's competent. Look at Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, I couldn't believe it when they found him to be competent. Thought to myself, what the hell's he got if he's not insane? You got an eating disorder?
She believes that James's family are the ones that decide whether or not Ivan gets a new trial. And I had to tell her that that's not how it worked. I had to explain to her that they have no say in it. It's very obvious that they are not very familiar with the way that the system works. And a lot of the things that they're trying to do are not going to work because they just don't understand.
No, and, you know, unfortunately, I've seen so many. In 1997, they killed 37. In 2000, they killed 40. You know, they had doing two a night in 2000. It was awful. You know, I've been around this death penalty stuff for so many years, not just in Texas, but elsewhere, right here in my own state. And it's an awful situation. And I understand prison conditions. We've got a hot mess going on up here. My heart goes out to all of these people. I have a client sitting on Texas's death row now that is so handicapped, he can't even wipe his old rear end. And he's supposed to be able to use a handicapped shower, and they won't allow him to do so. You know, and I understand, you know, they have bad food. They have lack of medical, the air conditioning problems. But there are so many other cases out there that really need to be looked at. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I want to end this case. There are so many people who are more deserving of the amount of time that people are willing to put into a case like this. And
it hurts to put a period at the end of a sentence many times. But sometimes you have to do it. Sometimes when you've done all you can do and you know you've done your very best, that's when you have to stop it and move on. And my suggestion to you, Liz, stop it.
And that's what I'm going to do now.
Well, I hope that you do.
Yeah. I really appreciate you talking to me about this case. It's been so helpful and so eye-opening.
I hope Tammy lost my number because I really do not want to hear from her.
Well, Matt would be kind enough to give it to her because he's just giving everybody his information out.
She's going to learn. She's going to, you know, she can do whatever she wants. But I will tell you this. The things that she has said about me have not only been libelous but slanderous. And I am locked and loaded if I hear one more thing. I have a very good attorney, and I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Because I can unravel everything that she's ever said.
The whole thing is just crazy, and I can tell that we're pushing some buttons because they wrote to my mother in prison to try and scare her.
What a sad thing.
Into making me stop talking about the case because I'd hit on a few things they weren't happy about. And, you know, I really do believe that Sylvia had some part in covering up the crime, and I say that because of another recording that is being provided and which she accidentally tells the truth about the time they returned home and left for Arkansas and little things like that.
Well, I think what I would do, like I said, is just put everything out there that is public record. You know, of course, attorney-client is privileged communication, but the things that are available, public record, you know, you can read the appellate briefs online. You can read, you know, the case online. It's been litigated, and some of the things, you know, that these people have brought up, I just look at them, I just shake my head, and I go, you know, I wish people could just walk in my shoes through one of these cases and see how hard and how difficult one of the greatest attorneys that I know, he's the most wonderful man, full of integrity, Richard Ellis out of California. I've worked with him for over 25 years. And like he said, it's like fighting, you know, the death penalty is like going up the Niagara Falls with, you know, no paddle. It's awful.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to lose more times than win. But we have had some good wins. I wish them all the very best, and I hope something will, you know, come out of this. But
I don't think it will, unfortunately, only because I really have poured over this with, you know, the best intentions. and it doesn't fit. And I was speaking to a mentor of mine, a PI here, and he just said, don't try to make the evidence fit a theory, because you're not going to get anywhere.
Well,
you have to look at the
nowhere.
Evidence.
There are PIs out there that chase husbands. I just shoot the son of a gun myself, but anyway. But to find one who specializes primarily in post-conviction death penalty cases, you know what the rules are, what the standards are, what procedural default is. You know how the CCA is. You know who the judges are. You know the circuit court judges. You know you can kind of almost bet on what's going to happen. And the system is not just flawed. It's broken. It is broken.
It's
and,
absolutely
you know,
broken.
People, absolutely. And I know that they are looking now at the law parties, thank God. And through your discovery, what do you think happened as a person who's not an investigator, but from what you read as a fresh new set of eyes, what do you think happened?
You know, this is like all just based on what I have in front of me and the discussions I've had. Amy said they had a fight and he shot a bullet, you know, over her head. And that's how that bullet got there. There was no pizza man named Matt. If there was a pizza man, it was Ivan. The next day he goes over to James's house, and James's family have said that they know. In fact, I have a recording from James's mother. She was going to go spend the night over there that night because her car wasn't working. And he told her no, because he was having company over, but he wouldn't tell her who. And I also helped Matt call the investigator, Matt. I helped him call the gardener that was supposed to be there that day. You know, he said the same thing, that he was told that Ivan was going to be spending the night, and he had just been divorced, he was down on his luck, and he needed a place to stay, so he asked him to rearrange so that they could do it on the Sunday rather than on the Saturday. So, I mean, it seems like Ivan told him he needed somewhere to stay. That's why that room is all messed up in the photos, because he was pretending to sleep in there. And I guess after he thought they were done getting ready for bed, he goes in there and kills them. I really think that James died early on, and I do believe that Amy Kitchen was murdered later. And I say that because there's a YouTube channel called Chasing Truth, in which this lady listens to the podcast on Facebook Live and puts it on YouTube. And I don't know if you know this, but there is another podcast out there called Cousins by Blood, and it's all about the case, and it is by the investigator that's currently investigating for Ivan's family. And he has changed every episode several times. So what you hear today is not what he published a month ago or even 2 months ago. So what you hear on this YouTube channel is like the very first edition, or one of the first editions. And in that one, he investigates Amy Betcher's stepfather, and he says that the next morning Ivan went over there and killed Amy, and then that's when he took Amy to show her the body.
That's what I always thought happened. It was in the morning that she was taken over there and shown the body.
Yeah, and that's why she was fine that night, because, you know, according to her, she didn't know the ring was Amy Kitchen's, and she hadn't seen the bodies, and that's why they were on a lot of drugs.
According to her, she found out that it did belong to Amy Kitchens, and she pitched out the window.
Right, and this is my theory, and, you know, I'm not saying this is what happened. If I had to put something together, in my mind, I see Ivan and Amy fighting in the car on the way to Arkansas, probably over the clothes that were left in the trash can, because I did find this document online, which is also on the website, in which it says that Amy defied Ivan and put the clothes in the trash can rather than in the dumpster. So I think that that came out once they were close, and that's why Kramer said, her stepfather says, it looked like they got into a fight, because she was red in the face and it looked like she didn't cry, she was upset. And I think it's because of those clothes. And I honestly believe in his phone records, because his phone records are available. He does make a lot of calls to his mother. To me, you know, the well check is pretty weird, because she knew where he was and she knew where they were going, because they had planned this trip to Arkansas about months in advance. So why would Sylvia need a well check? To me, it looks like she asked for the well check in order to try and get the clothes out of the apartment. I don't think she realized that the police were going to just be hanging out there and not leave her alone. The thing that makes me think that is that all of a sudden she wants to get this car because Ivan is telling her they're running drugs in this Mustang that his friend is driving and paying for, his friend Anthony Fonseca. He got this Mustang that's in Sylvia's name. You know, this capital murder has just occurred, and she's focusing on these keys, and she gets a key from Ivan to his apartment, and she eventually does get the keys to the Mustang from Anthony Fonseca, and she puts that key on that key ring, and their story is that they used that Mustang to help Ivan move into that apartment, and so Anthony had the key on the key ring, and he's the one that planted everything. That's their story. But I spoke to Anthony, and he didn't help them move into that apartment. Nobody knew they were living at that apartment. When the Corvette was found there, everybody was one, you know, they thought, and this is from Anthony and Kelly, that they just thought that that's where it was dumped because they didn't know that he was living there.
Well,
you know, so,
you know, you can speculate all day long, but you know, that's the difference between just a regular investigator and a fact investigator who is going to, you know, just deal with the facts, because I admire you for, you know, standing up for the cause, but I would certainly put a period to the end of this and
absolutely
move on to things that are really very important to you.
Absolutely.
I think so. That's my feelings. I mean, I had to do it. I don't like to say move away from anything, but sometimes, you know, you have to do the right thing.
It's hard for me because, like, I don't want to see him die. I don't want to see anybody die. Yeah, I feel like moving away.
I don't want to see anybody die.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to deal with reality, and when you've done all that you can do, then you just have to, you know, turn it over to God, let him sort it out.
Well, I really appreciate everything. I really do. And I appreciate all your help. Just, you know, all the time you've taken to talk to me, because you have helped me realize this is a dead end, and people that are worthy of our time and our energy are out there, and it's time to move on.
To thank everyone that has supported and followed us through our growing pains as we learn to produce a podcast while simultaneously reviewing and reinvestigating the case of James Mosqueda and Amy Kitchen, a case in which they were brutally murdered in the safety of their own home by their own blood relative, James Mosqueda's cousin, Ivan Cantu. This has been a lesson learned by being thrown in the deep end, and while I now realize that this case only seems to be an injustice if you only listen to the carefully crafted story by Ivan Cantu and his supporters, I have learned by experience the manipulation that someone like Ivan is capable of, and just how dangerous someone like him can be, even from the confines of death row. I myself, being a victim of homicide, losing my own father, and ultimately my mother to a wrongful conviction, I felt a strong connection to the family of James Mosqueda. I can also proudly say that because of this, I now have a friend for life in James's sister, Kelly. And because of her, I found the strength to tell the truth, to stand up for myself when it was clear that Ivan and the Cousins by Blood podcast were only using me to get their story heard, and to try and use the contacts I've made in the media to tell their fictional version of events, in order to manipulate the public and the justice system into getting Ivan Cantu a new trial or stay of execution. I am proud to say that I have stood up for the injustice that my own family have suffered, as well as to the lies and manipulation the Mosqueda family have had to endure. I am relieved that the Mosquedas have found justice, and I want to be sure that it remains this way. My purpose was to tell the truth, and now I can say with a clear conscience that I have done that, whether or not those out there that have heard both versions of events want to believe it or not. Thanks again for the support and for accompanying me on this roller coaster. This will be the final episode in which we discuss Ivan Cantu, though the final episode of Question the Case is yet to come. an episode dedicated solely to the victims, James Mosqueda and Amy Kitchen. Many thanks to Tina Church and the Mosqueda family for taking the time to speak to me. Thanks to Sylvia Cantu for case materials. Music and sound engineering by Shane Yoder. Writing and investigation by me, Liz Rose. I hope you will join us again when we release the final episode in which we get to know James Mosqueda and Amy Kitchen through the eyes of their friends and family. And next season, we present the case of Jim and Sandy Melgar from Houston, Texas. Thanks again for joining us. This has been Question the Case.